Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about President Biden's short and long-term healthcare policy agenda and what he can realistically achieve. President Biden, I hear a collective sigh of relief and feel the warmth of your collective smile. So today we're going to talk about Biden's updated plan to fight the COVID-19 pandemic and what that fight means for the prospects of incremental or revolutionary reforms to our current healthcare system. Sharing their tea leaves with us today are our two resident experts on the roundup, Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
It's morning in America all over, Den. I'm doing great.
All right. Julie, how about you?
Yeah, it's hard to not be happy and positive right now. So it's been a great week.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, before we talk about Biden's healthcare priorities and policies, let's talk about what happened 2 days ago when Biden was inaugurated. Dave, what moment did you enjoy most during the day-long celebration and ceremony?
Well, there was a lot of fashion on display. You know, everybody's talking about Bernie Sanders' woolen mittens. But my favorite moment was seeing Janet Yellen dressed head to toe with a blanket on. I'm glad she's now going to be running the Treasury Department. That's a sensible person.
What a great sign, right? Julie, how about you? What was your most memorable moment from January 20th?
I had dozens. So I couldn't get down to most memorable, but I will say that Kamala in purple was stunning and made by a Black designer. I love it. And I'm a Katy Perry fan, and her patriotic Audrey Hepburn look was really unbelievable. And that whole multicultural evening celebration was, I actually think, better than the usual. So I hope they stick with that. And those fireworks at the end, you know, I'm not a huge fireworks fan, but to see Washington lit up like that, and to see just the cadence of the beat of those fireworks, it just felt so celebratory. So it felt like a great capstone to, a really different day.
It was fantastic. For me, it was a tie between watching the former president leave the White House, you know, until those rotors on Marine One started spinning. I really wasn't sure it was going to happen. And John Bon Jovi singing Here Comes the Sun by George Harrison and the Beatles. So those, for me, those two events perfectly bookended my day. So, all right. Well, let's talk about two things on Biden's plate. Dave, let's start with COVID-19. Give us the latest on Biden's plan to save the country from the pandemic, why it might work, and why it needs to work if we want to pursue other healthcare reforms.
Well, President Biden outlined a bold and aggressive policy agenda in his inaugural address on Wednesday. It contained everything from economic recovery to immigration reform to social justice to foreign policy to climate change and so on. But the president can't make material progress on any policy goals until the country gets the COVID-19 pandemic under control. Therefore, COVID-19 is not only job one, it's jobs 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So accordingly, on day two, that was just yesterday of his administration, Biden released a 200-page national strategy for the COVID-19 response and pandemic preparedness. He also signed 10 COVID-related executive orders. Together, they will, in the words of the report, guide America out of the worst public health crisis in a century. Biden's plan, from my perspective, has four notable features. First one, lots of shots. I mean, nothing magic here, but a premium on executions. Looser restrictions on who gets shots and when they can get them. Expanding the number of vaccination sites. Expanding the number of medical personnel administering vaccines. And then finally, using the full power of the federal government to address supply chain shortages. And to do this, he activated the National Defense Production Act. Number two, big measurable goals to get the nation quickly on war footing against COVID. So 100 million shots in the first 100 days, mass mandates on federal property and for when people are traveling, majority of K through 8 schools opened in the first 100 days, and then hiring 100,000 new public health workers to help administer vaccines and conduct contact tracings. So third, delineated federal and state responsibilities. It's been pretty uneven up to this point, and that's an understatement. So the feds are going to take more responsibility for logistics of vaccine administration, better information flow and coordination, with the goal of having a smoother and much more uniform vaccine rollout across the states. And then finally, lots of money, ample funding, $20 billion for vaccinations, $50 billion to create a national testing and tracing infrastructure, $130 billion to retrofit the schools, additional funding for developing community health centers and to support nursing homes and prisons where outbreaks occur. You know, altogether, it's a big, well-funded plan. Biden is doing everything he can to rally the country and tame the virus as soon as possible. Hopefully by summer, the next 6 months are crucial.
Got it. Great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, what new wrinkles in Biden's COVID plan do you like? You know, what are some of the critical success factors we should be looking for? And how will we know when we actually turn the corner on this thing?
I don't know why you give me all the hard questions. So, you know, first things first, we haven't talked about Andy Slavitt. You know, I heard right after we podcasted last Friday that he was officially taking a senior advisor role. And what this means for the Biden administration is that they have the dream team back together. You know, Jeff Zients is brought in to, quote unquote, fix the healthcare.gov problem. And Andy Slavitt became his right hand, and they together, you know, frankly, made a miracle happen then. And I think, you know, Biden's hoping they'll do the same thing today. So I love that. What I don't love is that, you know, Jeff Zients has come out publicly to say that they inherited a complete mess. There are a lot of rumors that, you know, there's just literally no plan that the Trump administration handed over, whether there was a plan or they didn't hand it over. But, you know, it's pretty clear there wasn't a great plan. It's sort of stunning when you look at Biden's plan because it's so maddeningly obvious. And it just makes you feel like a lot has been left undone. So, you know, I love that this team is going to go into full-on Winston Churchill wartime mode. I mean, they are going to be the execution masters. And, you know, that's going to be meaningful to the process. You know, I also think that it's pretty incredible to see some of what they're doing, I think, as laying the groundwork for the future. So if you look at the jobs that they want to fund for public health workers, this is not only going to help us have a new pool to draw from for public health infrastructure going forward, but the healthcare industry is moving into the home, as we've seen with virtual care through COVID. So we'll need a lot more people who are trained to work, certainly with Medicare and Medicaid recipients, if not you and me, doing more in the home. And I think there's a lot to what they're trying to do and the jobs creation and long-term sustainability there that are really smart. Critical success factors, I'd love to see you know, numbers stabilize more. It feels like numbers are starting to stabilize in certain regions of the country, and that's great news. Slavitt has said publicly that he's more concerned about ending up with a glut of vaccines and not enough vaccinations. And I think even when I talked to friends today, people are really still confused about whether the number of vaccines are the problem or it's really our operation. So that's significant. I think just more options, more clarity, and a simpler process is going to be really critical. And if we can see the number of daily vaccines hit at least a million a day for the next 100 days, I think we're on a good track there. And we have to also recognize that new variants are going to happen. Like, it's just part of what viruses do. But as long as these new variants aren't massively increasing hospitalizations and mortality, we're actually starting to really make progress. And if we can get more mass compliance with this 100 days, then all those things will be enormously helpful and indicative. And I don't know, turning the corner, you know, depending upon what you read, people think that seasonality is going to aid in declining cases this summer. Early vaccines will reduce mortality and kind of protect from greater serious illness. So, you know, Q2 is thought to be the time when we can start to get this under control. Q3 and Q4, we might start to see herd immunity, but we've got to get some of this vaccine and mask wearing down to get there.
Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
I'd put an exclamation point on the execution point Julie made so eloquently. Biden learned firsthand in the rollout of the Obamacare website, healthcare.gov, what happens when government fails on execution. And it took a long time for the Obamacare to recover after that. The other thing I guess I'd like to add is I'm increasingly concerned about how perilous a time this is in the country. Ken Burns was on this week and made the observation that he thinks we're in the fourth great crisis in the history of the United States after the Civil War, the Great Depression, and World War II. And he actually thinks this might be the worst of them, hard to believe, because of the fragmented news sources that people get their information from and the level of misinformation. So when I say the next 6 months are crucial, we can't get to herd immunity without the majority of the country, the great majority of the country, getting on board with the program. And yet we seem further apart than we ever have. So I think Joe Biden is doing everything he can to unify the country. His inaugural address was exceptionally powerful in that regard. And ultimately, our ability to collectively act in our collective best interest is up to us, we the people. And so we're going to see, as Lincoln observed in the Gettysburg Address, whether our form of government can long endure. I'm hopeful we're going to succeed, but there's a chance we'll fail. And if we do fail, that'll be another dent in the American experiment. So I think it's a perilous time, Dave.
Interesting. Love thy neighbor, right? That's how we're going to get through this. All right. Now let's talk about more fundamental healthcare reforms. Julie, assuming we do get past this pandemic, what should top Biden's healthcare policy agenda? What should he do? What can he do?
They're all great questions. And I think this has shifted a lot even since the campaign, just given the trajectory of COVID. And as Dave said, if we can't get past COVID, we're not going to get to much else. So, you know, for the first time, I think in a very long time, healthcare is not going to be among the biggest priorities for Congress's first term agenda, which it typically always has been when you get a new Democratic administration in. And we politically and societally are really starting to define health today around COVID, around mental health, and around economic health. So big healthcare reform just isn't in the cards in the way that, you know, we would typically think about it. And given the devastation of COVID, it's really hard for Biden to come in and just quickly shut down some of what Trump started, because people are in a bad place and we can't just take something away without, you know, making an alternative available. So I think we'll see a slower roll back to tweaks of the ACA to get that back to a place that is a little bit more functional. And frankly, improved from the original. The goal, first and foremost, should definitely be that he looks at access and affordability. And some, you know, 4 years of Trump has really hampered these two areas of the health insurance exchanges. So Biden's focus will likely be making sure that people have access to what the law allows and they know they're eligible and where to get their benefits. You know, because Trump cut things like marketing and outreach dramatically, including things like community-based navigators who assist people in enrolling. So again, these public health workers can be helpful for the long term of healthcare. You know, Trump did things like shortening the sign-up period from 92 days to 45 days, kind of tweaked with things that really made it difficult for people to afford their healthcare. So I think you'll see Biden push on a variety of enrollment tweaks, expand premium subsidies. You know, he wants to take the income cap related to the federal poverty level of 100 to 400%. He wants to just get rid of that and lower the limit on the cost of coverage to 8.5% of income. So there are ways that they're thinking about, you know, how to improve access and affordability. And finally, the sanctions that Trump put in place are definitely not ACA compliant. So I think we'll see him play with those. I don't think we'll really see him go down the public option plan for all the reasons I talked about in the beginning. You know, the liberals still want Medicare for all. The conservatives, well, the Dems have been warming up to a public option. Conservatives are not there. And it'll be a fight. And again, people like Slavitt have come out to say that Biden isn't looking to pick a big divisive fight. It's not going to be how we unify all. Well, I think a lot of us think we could push a public option through. It really may not happen.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, what can Biden do within the framework of the ACA to build a better healthcare system? What can he do outside of the ACA to build a better healthcare system?
You know, Dave, I think sometimes better health reform occurs when healthcare is out of the spotlight than center stage. I think both parties agree that we should have more access, lower cost, better outcomes. And when you go down to the administrative level, there's general agreement on reducing fee-for-service, on putting more risk onto the shoulders of payers and providers, eliminating market concentration of payers and providers in regional markets. And I think all of that can continue and in some ways maybe continue more effectively with healthcare out of the spotlight. I was a little worried to see this week the American Hospital Association coming out and calling for the repeal of the site neutrality regs and to roll back the transparency initiatives on hospitals having to post their negotiated rates with insurers. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of lobbying muscle trying to go back to the way things were. So I'm hopeful that the Biden administration keeps on course. The fact Andy Slavitt is there means there'll be some very strong voices for value-based care delivery. So I think that's what they do, is they work around the margins through the regulatory process to try to make things better. The other thing I think you could see out of CMMI, once they actually get a new director of CMI and even a new director of CMS, we don't know who those people are yet, but moving from a lot of small demonstration projects to some really big demonstration projects and potentially expanding them beyond Medicare to include other government-funded healthcare programs, the military, the VA, TRICARE, and so on, with the idea of not being so much to see whether they work, but to send the signal loud and clear out into the marketplace that going forward, the federal government's going to be buying healthcare based on value, better outcomes, better health, lower cost, better customer service. So I think that's what I'll be looking for, is kind of what's happening on the sidelines while the main show is going on fighting COVID-19.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
The only thing I'll reinforce is perhaps one of the best things the Trump administration did was put those transparency rules in place. So I, like Dave, would be super concerned to see Biden roll those back. They are great for the fabric of the foundation of value-based going forward and consumerism.
Yeah, there's always a desire to go back to the status quo, isn't there? So that'll be interesting to watch, like you say, behind the scenes. Thanks, Julie. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, what will be the big healthcare headline next week?
I think we're actually going to continue seeing more of this messaging coming out of Biden and his administration and Zients and Slavitt and the like around the situation that we are really in. You can see that they're starting to really reposition. So I think it's going to be all COVID all the time. I do also think you're going to see some more policy positions announced, which is great in health. So I think we're just going to start laying the groundwork for progress.
Got it. Dave, what will healthcare wonks be wringing their hands over next week? Anything?
I, like Julie, am really looking to see who the Biden administration is going to appoint to be the head of CMS and the FDA. So I think those announcements could come out next week. And if they do, they will send a pretty strong signal to the marketplace over what the policy direction is going to be about the things we were just talking about, not necessarily COVID.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Julie. Onward and upward, right?
Why not?
That's right. Here we go.
All right. That is all the time we have today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.